This is Susan Vibrock of Telluride Inside and Out. I'm speaking with Jackie Green. Jackie Green is an emerging superstar in the music world. He is appearing on the bill with at the Blues and Brews Festival this weekend, September 18th through 20th. Hi, Jackie.
Hi, how are you doing?
Well, thank you. So let's get the backstory. You grew up in Cameron Park, California, just east of the state capital of Sacramento. Is it true your first instrument was a battered old piano and then a leftover guitar that had once belonged to your dad?
Yeah, for the most part that's true. I mean, there's always been guitars around. I don't know which one was necessarily the first instrument. I can't really remember, but piano, there was definitely a busted up piano in the household and guitars. So that's what there was. I don't know which one came first, though. I mean,
right.
People ask me that all the time, and I usually pick one or the other.
music, you've been playing music since you were a child, I gather.
I've always sort of been tinkering around with it. I didn't really get all that serious about it until I was in high school, I would say. But I'd always played around, you know, being as there's nothing really else to do where I grew up, so.
Okay. I understand that you first were attracted to the hard rock acts such as Metallica, Nirvana, and Pearl Jam until you discovered Ray Charles. Is that so?
Well, that's true. That's because, you know, when I was younger, Nirvana and Pearl Jam and the Soundgarden, Metallica, Guns N' Roses, that was the rock music that was there. And I still actually really love those bands. And it's not necessarily until I discovered Ray Charles. It's not like I dislike Guns N' Roses because I found Ray Charles. I like them both. But I discovered blues music, soul music, bluegrass music, and basically American roots music, and somewhere around my sophomore year in high school. And that really did it for me. You know, I really sort of connected with it, you know, for some reason or another at the time. And that's sort of what I fell in love with.
Okay. I understand your first appearance was at the tender age of 16. Do you recall the moment?
I do, vaguely. What I recall is that I just played guitar. I was 15 or 16, and I don't remember. I sat in with a blues band at a brewery in Sacramento, and I don't remember what the band's name was, but I remember we did the Eric Clapton version of Crossroads, I think, and something else. I don't remember, but. I remember the brewery gave me a free T-shirt and, you know, then said, "You're too young to be here, now leave."
Rusty Nails was something of a breakthrough. Were you surprised at the response to your first self-produced, self-released, full-length effort?
Sorry, I didn't hear you. Something you said breakthrough?
I'm talking about Rusty Nails as being something of a breakthrough. Were you surprised at the response to your first self-produced and self-released first full-length effort?
That's too kind. That's very kind of you. I wouldn't say breakthrough. I don't know if there really was a lot of response. I mean, maybe just locally, you know, but it wasn't like, you know, it wasn't really any big deal. My memory is just sort of like another thing that, or the first thing that I did. And, at this point now I'm just quite embarrassed about it, but it is what it is, you know, and, I don't remember feeling like there was a whole lot of, you know, acclaim or anything like that for it. And, you know, which is fine because I certainly wouldn't revere that record at all.
Okay.
That's just me, but you know, it is what it is. You know, I'm just slightly embarrassed about it.
Okay.
I wasn't singing like me, you know, singing like somebody else.
We can move on. After high school, you relocated to Sacramento, where you played regularly to standing room only crowds. Is that when you met Mario D'Andia of Dig Music? Could you talk about his influence on your career?
I met Marty at an open mic night, and he was the neat thing about Marty is that he had no experience in music management whatsoever, and so this whole thing for both of us is sort of like a learning, it's a real organic sort of learning ground up kind of thing, And you know, when I met Marty, he was like some sort of insurance executive or something like that, and so he was a little uptight and all this stuff, and I think over the years, you know, we became friends. I think he's instilled a little bit better of a business sense in me, and I've helped him to loosen up a lot. You know, so it's like opposites attract, kind of, you know.
Perfect. Although each of your discs are different, each is different, themes have emerged in your music like love, longing, travel. Now you have moved on to transformation. And so could you talk about giving up the ghost?
Sure.
What does the title refer to? Which ghosts are leaving town?
Well, the title comes from Tropic of Capricorn, Henry Miller book. It's the it's part of the first paragraph in there, and I remember feeling to myself when I read that book, I was like, oh well, that's sort of like, for some reason, it sort of summed up, you know, my thoughts, you know, and really, you know, the term to give up the ghost is basically to die or to let something go.
Right. Right.
And so, for me, I kind of felt like, you know, for the last couple of records, I've been trying to sort of like shed the Bob Dylan thing as best I could. I mean, I'm not kidding anybody. Bob Dylan's a huge influence on me, but I've never really felt like I sounded like him all that much. Like, I identify a little bit more with, like Bruce Springsteen more than I do with Bob Dylan for some reason, and the Stones and stuff like that. But I don't know. For that, I just kind of felt like the group of songs that were on that record were, for me, at that time, were sort of like a shedding of maybe the old ways that I used to make songs. You know, it was like a different, it was, the whole process was different for me. I spent more time just sort of like searching for like an interesting sound rather than just sort of like piling on and building track by track like I always used to. So it was just sort of like a, I don't know, it just sort of summed it up for me. I felt like, in my own head, anyway.
Okay. Your blog is terrific, predictably tongue-in-cheek, but on one occasion you made reference about overcoming your fear by picturing the front row all dressed up in winter parkas with big fur hoods. Fear, is that...
I said that, really?
You said that in your blog. But the whole notion that you would be fearful anymore, you've been out there now for, what, six years or more, you know, with success after success. Do you still have stage fright?
Yeah, I do, every time. Every time I go on stage. For me, I've gotten, the only thing that it's gotten, that I've gotten better at is just, I guess, showmanship and like, just sort of stage banter maybe, and just sort of being comfortable while I'm playing. Like, I've always gotten nervous before I go on, and I probably always will. It's not really I don't know if it's the most, I don't know if it's very natural to want to like bear your art in front of hundreds, maybe thousands of people. You know, it's probably it's not like it's not something that that's I don't know if it's I don't know why I just but then once I get into it, you know, once I realize that, you know, everybody's there to enjoy themselves, and you know, they're there because they want to be there for the most part. Sometimes they're not, but then it helps me to relax a little bit, and then ultimately everybody has a lot more fun, me included. But yeah, I mean, I would say that I mean, there was a time when I was like deathly afraid of going on stage, and I mean, yeah, that's calmed down some because I've done it so many times now, but I still feel it, you know. I think in a way it's a human. I think it just makes me human. You know, I figure if I don't care at all, then I probably wouldn't get nervous. But since I care a little bit, you know, I care how it sounds. I care how we play. You know, I care. You know, all this. You know, you might not know it by looking at me, but I do care.
No, you definitely can't tell. But it also sounds like you use the adrenaline very well.
Well, it's one way to metabolize.
So you've been to Telluride at least once before that I know of. What are you looking forward to most about your return engagement at Telluride Blues and Brews?
Well, the beer is great. And now that I'm old enough to drink beer, no. I think we've actually been there. I want to say like three or four maybe. I can't remember. We visit a lot of the mountain towns in Colorado, Aspen and Telluride the ones I can't even think of right now. But it's always really beautiful country up there, you know, as I'm sure you know. And every time we go to Colorado, that's actually what I look forward to the most. I'm a sucker for good views, you know. And you know, one of these days I'm going to want to go fishing if I ever have a day off up there. So.
Yeah. But and you know who's coming to this year's festival, right?
I don't. I haven't. I just got off our summer tour, and so I haven't even looked at the thing yet. But I'm sure you know who's coming.
So you're on a bill with Joe Cocker, Otis
Taylor. Oh, great! Cool.
Bonnie Raitt's on the playing on the weekend. She's not playing on Friday, but Otis Taylor and Joe Cocker are.
Excellent. Right on. That should be a great show. That should be fun.
It should be a fabulous Friday.
Excellent. Well, everybody should come on out.
Everybody will. So this is Susan B. Rock, Telluride Inside and Out. I'm speaking with Jackie Green, who's returning to Telluride for the 16th annual Telluride Blues and Brews Festival this weekend, September 18th through 20th. Thank you for your time, Jackie. We look forward to seeing you.
Absolutely. It'll be a blast.